Welcome back. I'm Pierre Daly, Managing Editor at AdvisorAnalyst.com, and this is Insight is Capital. Steve Hawkins is here. Hawk is in the house. Steve, welcome back.
Hello, Pierre. It's great to be back, I think. Thank you for having me today. Yeah. And, you know, it's a whole new world, I guess. Got to come back to the office and put a jacket on. And it's hard
to get back into that, isn't it?
Yeah. I used to be wearing a bathing suit every day. Now I'm putting pants on.
Well, Steve, welcome back. Thanks so much for being here. It's really great to have you. How the heck are you?
I'm well. You know, I had some great time off. I traveled the world. I hit almost every continent. I got to check off so many things on the bucket list that I wanted to do.
That's what I was going to ask you. How was your retirement?
I can't complain about what my retirement was. You know, I did 26 countries, I think, and I got to do a lot of different things that I'd never done before, and just really enjoyed life. I think I only spent about 3 months in Canada last year, so
right.
Traveling the world was. I traveled the world a lot previously for work and for entertainment and stuff, but this time was, you know, I had to pay the airfare so myself, and so it became a little more complicated, and my wife was like, you know, I want to do this a lot more, and then it was like, do I need to go back to work to potentially do that, and you know, down the road, and you know, here I am. Thought I was going to stay retired in the fall, at least when I came back to Canada, and then I had a couple of discussions with friends and with my wife and my new partner here at Long Point, Myron Jenick, and this opportunity to acquire an already registered company and build an ETF company from the ground up the way that I want to do it. You know, with my own rules and nobody telling me what to do, and I have a board, but it's a friendly board, and I don't really have to answer to my board because, you know, my father-in-law is not really going to question my ability in the how I get to what ETFs I get to launch and how I get to do them. So, you know, I'm excited to really dig in again, and do things my way. You know, my hardest thing right now is sort of managing time, which I haven't really had to do. It's really been a big adjustment this last month, figuring out priorities and managing my own right. time. And it was something that I actually thought I did very, very well when I was CEO at Horizons. But sort of I lost the ability to do that, taking a year off when it didn't matter what time you really got to get out of bed, and except to go out on, you know, a safari excursion, or you're, you know, touring the Blue Mosque or things like that. You know, it was a very different schedule. And I think I slept a lot more back then too, but and now I'm here and having a little bit of fun. So it's all good.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I would say that, you know, my sort of recollection of all that time at Horizons, that you brought a very strong entrepreneurial spirit to the company. And I think in the early days when you first took over the helm at that company, that was what really drove it, you know, was your spirit. And you know, the way that you rallied the folks at Horizons into projects and commitments and you know, taking the company into the future. So I can see where, you know, that same spirit would work for you in your new venture. And so, I mean, congratulations. It's great to have you back. I mean, it's great to have you back on the show, but it's great to have you back in the industry.
Yeah. I've had a really, really great, overwhelming warm response to my coming back into the industry, and I can't believe the people that have reached out to me and are very excited to see what happens and going forward from here, and I'm excited to see what happens as well, kind of thing. So yeah, it's I pride myself on innovation and doing things different, you know, I had a great time working with the people at Horizons. You know, hired almost all of the staff that work there in the end when I left, kind of thing, and I built some amazing relationships. And it was really the people of the company and working with those people that made Horizons what it was. It wasn't just me. It was a team effort for sure. You know, I might have been the guy who sort of made the final decision of what to do and how to do it, and you know, I pride myself on you know, being a strong structurer and understanding the nuances of the industry and knowing everything about the industry. I wasn't a sales guy when I took over the company. I ended up having to become a sales guy, but I prided myself on knowing everything else about the company other than sales. And but then having to work with the salespeople, you know, regularly to help, you know, close new clients and things like that became a lot of fun. You know, public speaking was not a forte of mine, but then, you know, starting to get up on stage in front of 200, 300, 400, 500 people, being keynote speaker at many global ETF events, you know, going on BNN and things like that for the first time. Those are all a little nerve-wracking when you first get going on it, but you know, with more experience and believing in your company and believing in what you're doing, and knowing what it is you're talking about, is, you know, everything else became so easy from there. So, you know, when we, you know, launched our marijuana ETF, and when we launched the you know, our new corp with the total return structures and things like that, like, those are all things that I'm extremely proud of that Horizons did. Horizons, now Global X. But it was working with a group of people, even though I might have been the driving force behind a lot of those ideas and doing things differently and innovation. You know, I had to sell those ideas to the people that I was working with and get them on board, and then go out there and sell them. And that's sort of what I'm bringing here. Like, the, you know, my first employee that I hired here, you know, we had a sit down discussion, and I told him, this is what we're going to be doing. And, you know, before that discussion, he was like, I have no interest in working at the company. And then after literally 5 minutes after that discussion, he was like, Steve, I want to come work with you at the company. Right. So, you know, and that's what I bring. So it's, I bring energy, I bring excitement, I bring something, doing something different. And, you know, we're going to attack the ETF industry, and I'm not going to launch another, you know, Me Too product. Everything that we're going to be doing is going to be different, and we're really going to be trying to service two really distinct ETF communities, with the retail advisor being a prominent one, but also the do-it-yourself sector, self-directed investor as well. So,
Awesome. I'm excited to see what you bring. I think everyone is. I think everyone's curious. You know, your departure from Horizons was, you know, I don't know, shrouded in mystery. Everybody wondered, where did Steve go? You know, like, what happened? And we won't get into that, but I'm excited to see what you bring to market, Steve. You know, I'm sure there's a huge amount of curiosity as to what that will, you know, what that will bring. I want to introduce you, Steve, before we get into our conversation. In this episode, it's my great pleasure to welcome Steve Hawkins, CEO of Longpoint ETFs, to the show. Steve is known for his bravado, a true maverick in Canada's ETF industry, known for his dynamic leadership and strategic vision. He previously led Horizons ETFs, transforming it into Canada's fourth largest ETF provider. And after a brief retirement, if you've been listening, in 2022, Steve returned to the industry in 2023, driven by his passion for innovation and growth. At Longpoint, he's focused on building partnerships and launching groundbreaking investment products. Join us as we dive into Steve's journey. Thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned.
This is the Insight is Capital podcast. The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of AdvisorAnalyst.com or of our guests. This broadcast is meant to be for informational purposes only. Nothing discussed in this broadcast is intended to be considered as advice.
That was a great intro, Peter, by the way.
Well,
thank you.
You're welcome. It's well deserved. I tried to encapsulate the spirit, you know, your spirit into the introduction. And I think
the only thing you missed was, the wealth professional CEO of the year two times.
Wealth professional is one of our peers in the.
It's okay. But CEO of the year.
No. It's fine. No, you. Well, it's well deserved. You are. You earned those kudos. So, CEO of the year is something I should have added to your introduction. Okay. Definitely.
That's okay.
So, Steve, it's been quite a year to date. 2024, with all that's happening in equity and bond markets, equities have recently hit new all-time highs. Long-term bonds are skirting multi-decade lows. What are you optimistic about right now?
I'm pretty certain that interest rates will come down at some point in time, and volatility is going to go up. Volatility, equity markets are an all-time high, but volatility is an all-time low. In the equity market, and that is not sustainable.
Right.
There's going to be people that are pulling money out. There's going to be people that are just, taking money off the table, and where they're going to, what they're going to do with that is still a big question mark. I mean, the many of the ETF providers out there that have launched, short-term fixed income, high interest savings, or just cash related products are, doing very well in converting those dollars coming into the their industry in that way and putting it to work in very, very short-term fixed income products. Because, as you said, like fixed income, the market as a whole, you don't want to be investing in 10-year and 20-year and 30-year bonds right now. Like, it's just, there's, from my perspective, it's just a rocky road for the fixed income market. But people want to be participating in this equity market upside. But they're going to have to realize that, we're coming into the summer months. This is when volatility starts to really pick up. Going into the early fall, this is historically the most volatile time for the equity markets. And we've been in the seasonal period of where equity markets always do really well. It's just what's going to happen here, should you just be taking money off the table? And this is where I think volatility is definitely going to go up. I think, the equity markets might be able to stay here and level off, especially if interest rates come down. We're going to see a little bit of correction. We're going to see a little bit of market improvement again from there, especially as, interest rates potentially come down, even though I think most of that's baked into the current marketplace. So, it's going to be very, very interesting. I mean, we've seen, the iShares get into the thematic space with, a cryptocurrency ETF, which is, just reached over $20 billion of AUM, which is, prior to that, and it only took them, a couple of months to do that, which is just unheard of. But this is where Americans can't really invest in Canadian ETFs, where Canadians can invest in US ETFs, by the click of a button. All you got to just hit the exchange on your direct brokerage. So, Americans really had pent up down demand to invest into more cryptocurrencies from a physical perspective. And even though Canadians have had that opportunity to do that for, almost 4 years kind of thing. So, it's a different marketplace between Canada and the U.S., but I mean, we're so connected from an integration perspective. Canadians love investing in Canada. Canadians love investing in fixed income. I mean, we're the highest concentrated fixed income investors in the world, and the highest home-centric investors in the world. But what is our second choice from investment perspective? It's the U.S., but that's every country in the world. And some of those countries, it's their first choice. They only want to invest in the U.S. So, for us here in Canada, we're going to have a lot more choices coming in the ETF marketplace. I'm hopefully gonna help create some new opportunities for both the self-directed investor out there, as well as investment advisors looking for, you know, new and novel ideas. ETF marketplace continues to transform very, very regularly. You know, index providers are, there's many, many more index providers now. They're coming up with new and novel ideas all the time. But initially, you know, I'm not really focused on the thematic space or anything like that. I'm very focused on a distinct couple lines of business. But, you know, one of the things that I learned working at Horizons was there's a lot of people out there, like a lot of asset managers, investment managers, who have never really dabbled into the retail market space. There's investment advisors who know of these asset managers and have had to do segregated accounts and high net worth profiles and had to access product through offering memorandum and things like that. And that's not really the most efficient way to access the capital markets and these investment strategies. This is the ETF wrapper. This is what the ETF wrapper is all about. And the ETF wrapper is never going to be overshadowed by a different type of wrapper that I can ever see or foresee into the future. The ETF wrapper is here to stay, and we're just coming up with more new and novel and better ways of structuring different strategies to put into those ETFs right now. And that's sort of, you know, that's my, that's what I'm known for. And that's what drives me is trying to figure out how to get this strategy, which has never been available to a retail advisor or do-it-yourselfer previously without going through a lot of regulatory hoops and processes to get it into an ETF wrapper and put that into the marketplace for somebody to enjoy. And I mean, and that's what, you know, BlackRock amongst many other groups did with the Bitcoin, physical Bitcoin in the US, but, you know, Canadians brought that to market first. Canadians are very at the forefront, and I'm going to put myself in that group of people who have, you know, been very, very innovative and come up with new and novel structures and ideas and themes and be able to put those into an ETF wrapper first and put it out into the marketplace. I mean, that's why Canada is the home of the very first ETF in the world, you know, was launched here. And there's a lot of people, Canadians know it, but nobody else knows it, right?
Americans don't want to admit it.
Exactly.
So exactly. Steve, pulling on that thread, I think in the US, there's definitely some very progressive things happening in bringing capital market strategies into the ETF wrapper. Are there any in particular that you find interesting that you'd like to see brought to Canada? Any particular, like, you know, if we're talking about different strategies, like alternative strategies to, you know, different, maybe bringing twos and twenties into a wrapper or, you know, long short strategies, I mean, hedge fund strategies, you know, what kind of capital markets, or is it simpler capital markets activity, but still, you know, inaccessible because of the way the capital markets have generally been structured?
I mean, everything that you mentioned is really right near the top of my list from all the partnerships that I've been working with and talking to the people that are out there. They are very alternative. They're very hedge fund like. They're very, you know, different managed futures programs, different overlay programs over indices, but things that have never traditionally existed in an ETF wrapper. And the people that have been doing these and several of the groups that I'm talking to are in the US and they're US asset managers, and they have had some success in the US, and a strategy doesn't look like that doesn't exist here in Canada. So it's like, okay, who are they going to partner with in Canada to bring it here? Because they don't want to build the infrastructure to launch their own fund manager or fund management company here in Canada. And that's what I am. And I bring the expertise of the Canadian ETF marketplace and the Canadian mutual fund structuring marketplace to the table. And, you know, that's why I'm going to be working with a lot of US asset managers, but I'm also working with a lot of Canadian traditional asset managers who have been very, very, you know, they've kept themselves quiet from the retail front, just
right.
very relegated to, you know, family office type of products and their own pooled funds and selling within their own communities and things like that. And now they want to, you know, potentially access this vast ability to bring in the do-it-yourself investor as well as the retail advisor, and they've never been able to do that before. And you know, I want to partner with firms that want to put themselves out there. They want to take an ownership
right.
stake in their own products and what they're doing, and they're bringing. You know, they're bringing their own wherewithal, they're bringing their own image, their name, their brand. You know, they're active in the content space, and those types of firms. And I, like, I've just been surprised on how many of them are who have never thought about talking about or, you know, managing an ETF, you know, and that's sort of what I'm
right
helping them get there from that perspective. And how can an ETF help them with the way that they manage the money internally, from, you know, changing the way that they are managing pools across or segregated accounts across a whole bunch of clients? Why not be managing one pool of assets inside an ETF or a different product, and then their
right.
clients just own that one thing, and they can still do whatever they want from a fees perspective. So people
now
really
we're talking, I mean, Steve, we're talking about one of the things that sort of in background was the idea that an existing asset manager can become the sub-advisor of an ETF with your help to launch it into the market, to bring it to get it listed, and then provide all of the administrative background support and day-to-day oversight.
We bring the administrative and management oversight of an ETF. For us, it's a partnership platform, and we're primarily working with you know, other registered portfolio managers and asset managers from around the world that we're talking to that want to access, you know, an ETF platform in Canada. And you know, going back to the different strategies that we're talking about, they are, I would say, predominantly in the alternative type of world, but we are talking some traditional fixed income strategies, but with twists on them.
Right.
So not your, you know, typical 5 to 10 year bond product or a laddered product. You know, I'm not going to be launching a preferred Me Too product or a 5-10 year Me Too bond product. Everything will have a different twist on it, and. You know, we even saw a lot of innovation in 23, even with me out and not in the market. There was a lot of innovation in the ETF space. And I congratulate, like, all of my peers for helping to push things forward. But a lot of product has not really sold or done well. And I don't know if everybody is thinking through the whole process of how, you, from an ETF company perspective, how you come to market with products that are going to that are going to grow and that are going to do well. And that, you know, it's not that they just had the index had a great 5-year track record, and you have to, now you're just selling it. And then there's no index that has a bad track record that gets put in the ETF, right? Like, there has
right.
to be, there's got to be something else to it. So that's sort of what I'm thinking about. I'm always thinking about what's going on in the marketplace. Always thinking of what my peers are doing. And again, I want to be different for the most part from everybody else out there. So everybody that I'm going to be, you know, I built a lot of relationships and partnerships while I was at Horizons. And you know, to the extent that I never launched products with them before, but I always potentially wanted to launch a product with them, you know, I'm talking to all of those relationships right now. So, many
well,
of them
that's where do, I mean, that's yeah. where, you know, like, that's where an asset man, you know, an existing asset manager can come to you and partner with you on your partnership platform and have access to you. I mean, you as the matchmaker. I mean, you know, those asset managers are going to come with their domain knowledge, their experience, and bring that to the whole process. But you have the ability to connect them with the other parties in the market, the counterparties, the people that would support the activity in the background. And that's the part, that's sort of the missing link that you're providing, right? Is making those connections.
For sure.
Make,
I mean, even
possible for that asset manager to bring that, yeah, bring that to market.
There's even retail advisors out there that have been managing money in a very specific way. And they're like, you know, can I put my strategy into build an index around that strategy?
Right.
Or can you help me, you know, create an ETF off of my strategy that I can help use for my clients, and I have a lot of friends over here that want to, you know, invest in this strategy, but I haven't, you know, I don't let them, you know, use my strategy. And some people feel proprietary about their sort of active strategy, but that was more of an issue 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Transparency now, it doesn't have to be every minute transparency kind of thing. Even in the ETF world, from an active underlying portfolio, I mean, many funds don't post their holdings on a daily basis. They post them on a weekly basis or on a 2-week basis or on a monthly basis. You know, indices rebalance typically on a monthly basis. But active strategies don't have to be disclosed every day, and changes can be made, and people are buying a name. They're buying somebody who they trust, right? So this is where, again, as you said, you know, I bring the wherewithal of understanding all of the different components of how an ETF can work and how to make it work, and whether or not, you know, how I find the right partners to partner with. And the one great thing about, you know, my long point and how I can manage those partnerships is I'm not pigeonholed into a specific model. I don't have blinders on with respect to how that relationship can work. I have like 10 different variations of models of how I can work with you to create the right strategy for you. And you know, whether you're the owner or I'm the owner, whether we're joint owners, you know, whether you want to build it under your own infrastructure and I can administer it for you and manage it and handle all of the peripheral things that you don't really know anything about or want to care about.
Right.
I was going to use another word to call those things, but, I caught myself. You know, there's a lot of nuances to, starting an ETF and running an ETF.
There's a lot of plumbing, first of all, and, you know, which is the stuff that nobody typically gets to see that's happening in the background. And then there's all the marketing, there's positioning, there's the expenditure of doing that too. I mean, it's a lot of work. It's expensive to get found, you know, to get discovered by investors. That's where your history, your experience comes in. What was the light bulb moment? What was the aha moment that made you decide, I got to get back into this business?
I mean, once I started less traveling, I started, you know, having lunches and dinners and things like that with people in the industry that I had made some great connections with, and just started having a lot of conversations about, you know, nobody's doing this, nobody's doing this, nobody's doing this. You know, why isn't anybody doing that? Well, they don't have the background or the ability to do that. They don't have the huevos to do it. They don't have they don't have the structure behind them to have the forethought to get into that. And there's a lot of people that don't like to take risk. I've prided myself on, you know, putting myself out there and being innovative and you know, coming to market with so many firsts for the Canadian ETF industry or the global ETF industry. And that's what I'm going to try and continue to do here. You know, there's so many products in Canada that don't exist that exist in the US. And working with a lot of, and I have a lot of global ETF connections, a lot of friends that work in the U.S. and Steve, why isn't somebody doing that? Why isn't somebody doing that? You know, these things need to be brought to the Canadian marketplace. I don't like seeing trading reports from our Canadian direct brokerages, which say this U.S. ETF is the, you know, in the top trading for Canadians in a Canadian direct brokerage.
Right.
You know, like why? You know, why can't some Canadian firm launch that product so Canadians are investing in Canada? Canadians love to invest in Canada, but if there's not a product available, they're going to go to the U.S. to find it. And
well, speaking of that, there's tax consequences, right, that are sort of unknown, largely unknown by Canadian investors for investing in U.S. ETFs. They're not crazy, but they make the outcome less efficient than investors realize.
I accidentally did that a couple of years ago, and I had to tick that box, and I was like, oh my God, this is what happens now. And it's like, I don't ever have to go through that again. T1135s. Nobody wants to fill those out. You know, retail advisors hate doing that for their client. But sometimes they do, right? So, you know, but buying Canadian property that gives you access to the US markets is a good thing. So, you know, when you launch an ETF in Canada, it doesn't really matter what the underlying strategy is to that ETF, what it holds in its portfolio. It's Canadian property.
Right.
And therefore, it is more efficient for a Canadian investor to invest in a Canadian ETF than a US ETF.
So you've witnessed a lot of changes in the ETF industry over the years. What do you see as the most impactful trends shaping the future of ETFs? And what are you going to do about that?
Well, I can't say everything that I'm going to do.
What are you going to do with that?
I can't say I'm going to do. Well, I mean, I started in the ETF industry when there was three ETF providers, and now I think I'm the 41 or 43rd ETF provider.
Right.
Unfortunately, there's been a lot of ETF providers that have done it wrong from my perspective. You know, I've seen so much growth in the ETF industry. I've seen so much innovation in the ETF industry. You know, people don't listen is the way that I look at it. You need to listen to what the investors want at the end of the day, and think about what they think they're going to need tomorrow. And I prided myself on listening to our investors, you know, that they were talking to us every day, and what do you need from a product perspective, and how can you use something different in your portfolio, whether you be a self-directed investor or a retail advisor or even an institution. You know, what do you need to help you make your life easier to manage your money better for yourself or for your clients? You know, that's where I see myself going, is, you know, continuing to listen to what the retail marketplace is telling me, that they need here, and focusing on that, to give them what they need and build, you know, long point, on that basis.
Right.
And that's where we come in again. We're going to be bringing those unique strategies to this marketplace to give advisors choices, as well as the self-directed investor.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you see ahead?
Right now, I'm struggling with creating a logo. So the fact that I'm going to all these meetings and I don't have a business card is upsetting me a little bit. But that's almost done, I assure you. But
you almost don't need one, Steve. you know, everybody knows who you are, right?
I just want them to have my phone number, you know, just in case.
Yeah.
And if it's not in their contacts already. But
do people even do phone calls anymore?
I do. I love the phone.
Yeah. So, no kidding.
I love the phone. So I love to have a conversation rather on the phone over an email correspondence. But building the infrastructure the way that you need it to work for you, to make it efficient for you to build the company, I think that's the single biggest challenge. And determining what it is you actually need to do that. And who you need from a resource or person perspective. You know, we're going to be outsourcing a lot of different things that I would never have thought before that we could outsource. But I've been able to found out, you know, over the last couple of months, and knowing that I was moving forward with this, I can outsource that. And I don't have to have a physical body in my office to do this anymore. These are all, this world is changing so dramatically since COVID happened, to allow all of these different, to bring all these different resources to you in a, you know, in a medium like today. Like normally, like when I think we did this once before, we did it face to face, you know, before COVID, it was a very different discussion. We were sitting in chairs talking to each other, you know, and it was a lot of fun. And not that this isn't fun, but, you know, the technology, the transformation of the world, post COVID has really allowed us to, for me specifically, to build a company easier and better. But it's still, I have a lot of decisions that I have to make with respect to how to sort of create that overall structure itself.
Steve, I'm very excited to see what the future holds. Very excited. I mean, I want to come back full circle to your retirement and ask you, not so much about, you know, retirement, but in your travels, 26 countries, what were some of the highlights? What were some of the most amazing things that you saw in that time? I mean, you really packed it in there, right?
I really did. You know, but it was sort of big trips in a lot of different countries in those different trips. My wife is from South Africa, so we always, we go to Africa a fair bit, but we did, you know, multiple different countries that we hadn't been to before. But it was my first time in Australia and doing Australia, New Zealand, Tasmania, such an amazing country. And, you know, only spent a month there, just over a month there, but, you know, really had to pack it in. You know, we're going on a flight every 3 days to here. I really loved Australia. I'd never been to Turkey before, really, other than like Istanbul was such one of the most amazing cities in the world, and I'd never been there before. And seeing that for the first time was phenomenal. I got to go to the Grand Slam of tennis last year on my own. So I did Australia, the French Open, Wimbledon, and the US Open all in 1 year. I thought I was going to watch Djokovic win all of four of them, but but it, as it turned out, you know, I got to watch his match in Wimbledon, and there was no way that he was going to lose or Alcaraz was going to lose that. So, but like, I saw so many amazing things. So many people have asked me, what was the most amazing thing you did or saw or whatever? And it's just like, there was so many different experiences, that I had, that I really, really enjoyed. And then I got to check off my bucket list. You know, going scuba diving on the Great Barrier Reef was always on my bucket list, because I've always been a big diver and I'd never done it before. And, though I've dove pretty much in every other continent in the world, I'd never done it in Australia. So that was a lot of fun. And you know, I got to see so many different parts of Greece that I'd never seen before. I'd already been to all the islands before, but I got to tour. I love old things. I love being able to touch things that have been there for, you know, thousands of years. And doing that in both Turkey, with the Ottoman Empire, and Spain, and we toured all of the old buildings and things like that all throughout Spain. And then Greece, did a special tour. We got to go to like Sparta and Olympus and Olympia and all the different parts of Greece that I'd never, ever been to before, where you get to just walk right on the walks. You get to touch the stones that have been there forever. And I love history. Seeing everything old in the world that has been there forever, when we think of, you know, our life here in North America, and it's only been around for, you know, 150 years. And when you think about it over there, that was just a drop in the bucket. Like, I Paris, again, is one of the most amazing cities in the world. I love Paris, London, you know, just the history that is there as well. Italy is, again, one of the most amazing countries in the world, and doing Rome and different parts of Italy was always, it's always an amazing thing. I love going to Italy every year. So, and hopefully I won't stop just because I'm working now, but I'm definitely toning down on the travel time right now. Yeah. Though I'm from Newfoundland and I spend a good part of the summer in Newfoundland because we only have a limited amount of warm temperatures out there.
Was that like 4 weeks?
Pretty much. We've been 6 weeks of summer there. So I intend to spend some time this summer in Newfoundland as I always do. And very excited about that as well because we're going to have a great whale season. But last year we had the most amazing iceberg season in Twillingate, where I'm from. And this is where the name Long Point came from. It is the lighthouse on the island of Twillingate, where my parents and my grandparents and most of my great grandparents are from. So it was, so it's got history for me. It means something very personal to me. A lot of people have asked me where Long Point came from, and it is exactly that. It's the lighthouse on my little island. So, which everybody needs to come visit, by the way, because it's one of the most beautiful places in the world. So, but only come in July.
Fantastic. Yeah. July. Yeah. The very height of summer. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we go. Steve, congratulations. Thank you so much for sharing all of that, sharing all of your work, launching a new ETF company. I can't wait. You know, I think we all can't wait to see where you go, which direction it goes in, and what you bring to market. And I think we should just keep it open in the calendar that when you do launch, we should get together again on another episode to talk about what you're launching, what you've brought to market. I'm guessing you can't really talk about any of those things right now.
I can't.
So, you know, we kind of talked around it and all over, but not specifically about any of it. Thank you for your incredibly valuable time and your insight.
Well, Peter, thanks for having me here and absolutely we'll put something in the calendar for, the end of the summer and maybe into September. I'm sure we'll launch a product here or there before then. I would say the majority of the products that we're going to be launching will be, in August, September, October kind of thing. So
awesome. Awesome.
And then we'll do something again in the fall and catch up at that point in time. And then you can say you can applaud me on innovation and be excited for me. So, I'm very excited about the future as well. I'm also very excited about the Canadian ETF landscape and what it means to Canadian investors and how much the ETF industry still has to grow. And I'm back here now and I'm going to help it grow and bring new innovation ideas to the Canadian investors.
Awesome. Well, go Long Point. Congratulations, Steve. That's congratulations on your launch.
Thank you to Advisor Analyst and thank you to you and Joe and for having me here today, and we will definitely talk again soon.